This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Randomly Generated
Yes.
History Club.
We're
where
back.
Three non-historians still aren't historians.
I have failed my exams. I've been doing an open university history credit and they've just listened to this and failed me.
Yeah, it didn't go well.
It's weird being back after those things that happened in September.
I know, yes. Here now in the day that is October.
This is definitely the 3rd of October
Yes.
when we're recording it.
Only 10
so
days
autumnal.
After that enormous blimp got snagged on Big Ben.
That's right. That's right. That did happen 10 days ago. I remember where I was quite clearly.
We all remember where we were on the great blimp snagging day.
Yeah, it was
blimp day.
It was tough day for blimp stocks everywhere.
And what was your favorite thing that happened?
My favorite thing that happened in the month of September.
The mole people. You were saying that it's the mole people.
The month that has just gone.
Yes.
The mole people is definitely up there.
Yep.
Which I think have conspired against the people in good Zeppelin tech to snag them. I think
well, they absolutely did, didn't they?
Of course they did. It's undergoing investigation, but you know.
Yeah, of
allegedly.
Course.
Sorry, allegedly the mole people.
I mean, anytime there's a blimp accident, your first thought is that the mole people.
Who hates
it.
The sky the most for the moles?
There's no allegedly about it. They seized half of Wessex.
And that was September.
As you, our dear listeners, will undoubtedly
know,
just lived through the month of September.
This is literally old news to you.
Yeah, it really is. We really should not rehash this. We should rehash even older news, which is what I call history.
So on that note, just in case you've forgotten the premise of this podcast, we have picked a year at random and tried to learn things about it. And I'm Anna, still... That's still who I am.
And I am Ant.
You are Ant. And what's your name?
My name's William.
Bilbo?
Will.
This season is so different than the last.
I know.
Where before you would have done the introductions.
Yeah.
And now we're introducing ourselves. I feel the autonomy and power coursing through my veins.
It'll never happen again.
I feel like actualized. I feel seen.
How do you feel about our decision not to replace Will in the off season?
Well, I felt under pressure from the mole lobby for sure. But thankfully they've recognized his mole like status so that he's sufficiently mole-ish to
exactly.
stay. So it's fine.
Just small beady eyes and sharp, sharp claws. So anyway, this week we are talking about, we've chosen a really good one. No, sorry. We have been presented with a really good year to kick off season/series 2. It is the year 32 BCE. That's a time that happened.
It is one of the good ones.
Guess who we're going to be talking about. Let's give our 3-word preview of what we're discussing today.
Sure.
And?
This Ain't Rome.
This Ain't Rome. Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Good.
There was other history, by the way,
which we don't believe that. Well,
nomadic sorta people.
Nomadic sorta people. Were they sort of people or sort of nomadic?
Sort of people.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, they were humans.
Oh, the slug folk.
Okay.
To be clear, I'm trying to introduce some ambiguity.
Okay.
As to whether they were one coherent people,
but not whether or not they were Homo sapiens.
I thought you were just trying to do like clickbait.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're not aliens.
Okay. Or like some sort of were slug.
And my three words, I guess I am still a little creatively bankrupt because all I could come up with was, she's very famous.
Is it Madonna?
It is. I'm talking about the eternal Madonna.
What, the mother of Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior?
Exactly. Who in 32 BCE would probably have been being born. No, she's a little younger
than that. What age was she when?
I think she was pretty young.
She wasn't.
She wasn't 32.
No, she wasn't. Yeah,
she was. She was in her 70s.
She was.
Jesus was not IVF. Yeah,
he was. That was the miracle of his birth.
That's the miracle. Yeah.
Jesus is the first test tube baby. Yeah. All right. Well, yeah.
It wasn't a regular birth, was it? I mean, like, no, it was totally irregular.
I mean, step one, stable, not regular.
Right. The donkey looming over you.
NHS. The donkey was the lab tech.
It's really shocking what's happened to the NHS when they're all out of stables, you know?
It's bad, isn't it?
All right, let's go ahead and talk about 32 BCE. I'm going to go first today. I'm talking about somebody who's very famous, and she's a woman, which in history narrows it down to a pretty short list. And so today I'm talking about the one and only Cleopatra.
Of course.
Have you heard of her?
I only know of her from the Katy Perry music video.
Well, that's the entirety of what I've based my research on, so that's good.
She had a wolf, didn't she?
Did she? No, you're thinking of Shakira.
Oh, right, yeah. That's right, yeah.
So obviously Cleopatra is one of the most written about people in history, and I'm going to talk, this is going to be a whistle-stop tour of her life and loves and death. So here we go. I'm going to start not in 32 BC, but in 332 BC.
Can I just, later on, can we look up what a whistle-stop is?
Yeah.
Originally.
Yeah. I think
isn't that a train thing?
Yeah, it was like a way of the presidential campaigns in the 1800s. They would campaign on the back of a train and then like the whistle stop, like everywhere the train stopped.
Oh, it was a short stop.
Would come over to...
I think so.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that makes sense to me. I think it's train related, yeah.
Yeah, let's
toot all aboard kind of thing.
Quick Google.
Because like a non-whistle stop would like be a big town.
Yeah, a style of political campaigning where the politician makes a series of brief appearances or speeches at a number of small towns over a short period of time.
And it comes from that era.
Yeah, because they'd usually like just be in a railroad car and they just keep driving along.
Return to Egypt.
Okay. Cleopatra, the originator of whistle stop tours. Now, in 332 BC, Alexander the Great invades Egypt and puts his general Ptolemy the First on the throne, thus establishing the Ptolemaic dynasty. And this would be Egypt's last dynasty, and Cleopatra is essentially its last ruler. So she initially came to power alongside her younger brother, Ptolemy the 13th, because this dynasty had a tradition of sibling marriage, which we don't love, and co-ruling amongst siblings. But Cleopatra is a pretty good ruler.
I sort of glazed over and...
Oh,
sibling
great.
Marriage.
We're already just right back into it.
No, this is season two, totally different. I'm paying attention at all times.
Yeah.
Sorry. I didn't click to what you're saying. I thought the siblings would marry people.
No, they would marry each other. And then be co-rulers.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you've got to keep a pure bloodline, haven't you?
Yeah. Super pure.
It gets cloudy pretty quick. But Cleopatra...
All these webbed feet everywhere.
Cleopatra famously had webbed feet. No, she was good. She kind of separated herself from her brother as much as possible. It's also possible that they weren't actually married, but she did good things with the economy. She increased tax revenue. She built temples. And she just generally gets on with being pretty competent. And in her eyes, she's the only ruler. But her brother doesn't want to give up the throne that easily, and eventually the falling out between them becomes so severe that Egypt descends into a civil war. And Julius Caesar arrives to step into the vacuum, because Egypt at this point is a client state of Rome. And he steps in, gets in the middle, and tries to get them to reconcile, but Ptolemy isn't having it. And long story short, Ptolemy is defeated, and Caesar declares Cleopatra and another younger brother co-rulers of Egypt.
Okay.
And that was the end of her involvement with Julius Caesar. Except not. So we all know that Caesar and Cleopatra had an affair. She apparently charmed him with her wit, though the historian Plutarch suggests that she was her instead, well, sort of, she was bound inside a bed sack to be smuggled into the palace to meet him.
Right.
Because she didn't want her brother to know she was meeting him.
Her brother husband.
Her brother husband. Yeah, exactly. But they start having an affair. They have a child named Caesarion. And
Of section fame.
Well, Caesarion with an O.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Thanks for ruining that joke, Emma, with your accuracy.
I'm sorry. I just can't let it stand. Caesar doesn't, like, super acknowledge or be public about this fact, but Cleopatra tells everyone that it's his kid. And she's even in Rome in the year 44 BC when Caesar is assassinated, and she's stays there after he dies trying to get Caesarion recognized as Caesar's heir, but Caesar's will names Octavian instead. More on him later. So Cleopatra goes back to Egypt, has her brother killed by poisoning, as you do, and then elevates Caesarion as her co-ruler.
Oh. Her son.
Her son, yeah.
Got it.
So she kills her brother, her younger brother, co-ruler, after she's already defeated her other younger brother, co-ruler, co-husband, and now she's co-ruling with her son.
The Egyptians were intense this period, weren't they?
Well, yes, and the Greeks really is what they were.
So, interesting fact about...
She wasn't Egyptian. Her native language was Hellenistic Greek. Yeah. She was the only pharaoh of the Ptolemaic dynasty to learn Egyptian, though, which is cool.
That's good of her.
Yeah.
Interesting fact about Egypt and Cleopatra.
Yeah.
Cleopatra lived closer to modern day than she did to the building of the pyramids.
Yeah.
So the pyramids were ancient in her day.
Yeah.
And they were like, crazy? What are these things? I don't know. Big triangles?
Yeah.
All right, what's inside them? I don't know. Let's wait till, like, you know, Indiana Jones comes along and plunders them to find out. So, yeah.
Yeah, that fact is amazing. I really thought you were going to say Cleopatra is closer to Tyrannosaurus Rex than T-Rex was to Brontosaurus whatever.
Aliens built the pyramids.
Yes.
Yeah, of course they did.
Yes, of course they did. What was it?
Look it up, sheeple.
Did you think it was mole people?
Careful.
they're listening.
Yeah, the people in Wessex are not going to be happy with this.
All right, so the next man we have to define Cleopatra by is Mark Antony. And we all know that they had an affair as well. Like I said, she's very famous. It's possible that Cleopatra and Mark Antony met when she was just 14, and Mark Antony would later say that he fell in love with her then, which is, you know, gross. But they definitely reconnected in 41 BC when he is ruling Rome as part of the triumvirate. He summons her to meet him. She plays hard to get. Then she invites him and his officers for this huge banquet aboard her ship. It's classic.
I always do
courtship that. Courtship 101. He's super into the banquet. He likes her dinner wares. And it's like, boom, they're in a relationship. That wasn't a euphemism.
What are we talking? Like, how many spoons?
A good fish knife.
A lot of spoons.
Yeah. Grape tongs.
What are those oyster forks?
Oh,
oyster
yeah.
shuckers?
Yeah, nothing gets me
going like, going an, like oyster an oyster shucker. Shucker. So she's with Antony for a few years. They have some kids, which he acknowledges, which is great. But he does also marry Octavia, the sister of Octavian, who was the grandnephew and heir of Julius Caesar. So Mark Antony is really bound to Rome through this very official marriage, having kids with Cleopatra. And this is where the trouble starts. Basically, Octavian and Antony start to fall out. In around 34 BC, Octavian and Antony engage in this huge propaganda war against each other because Octavian wants to be sole ruler. He doesn't trust Mark Antony because Mark Antony is like openly cheating on his sister. And
what a sentence.
It's a whole thing. Cleopatra obviously gets dragged into the mix. She's said to have brainwashed Antony with witchcraft and sorcery, obviously. And in 33 BC, Octavian makes a speech to the Senate accusing Antony of, quote, attempting to subvert Roman freedoms and territorial integrity as a slave to his Oriental queen.
Oriental?
Yeah.
Does that have a different meaning then?
No, in fact, maybe that's not maybe a quote from Octavian. That is a quote from somebody talking about it. Anyway, whatever. She's bad because she's not Roman.
She's a baddie.
That's basically what it means. Antony responds by naming Caesarion, who was Cleopatra's son with Julius Caesar, the true heir, instead of Octavian. So he's trying to supplant Octavian as Caesar's heir, even though he's doing it through the son of, like, it's not his son.
Yeah, gotcha.
This makes Octavian very mad. And in 32 BC, things really kick off, which is convenient because that's the year we're talking about today. The Senate is split in its loyalty to Octavian and Antony, but eventually Octavian seems to gain the upper hand, and 200 senators flee Rome to go join Antony. He and Cleopatra go to Ephesus to gather a fleet, and then she persuades him to officially divorce Octavia. And by late 31 BC, they are in open war. Octavian on one side and Antony and Cleopatra on the other side. This culminates in September 31, when we have the Battle of Actium, a very consequential battle in Roman history. Antony and Cleopatra have the bigger fleet. It's a big naval battle. But their forces have been gradually hit by lots and lots of big defections because the Romans still supporting Antony are starting to be wary of Cleopatra. And it's true that her prime objective in all of this is to defend Egypt. And in fact, during the battle, she basically deserts Mark Antony and sails away on her own ship as an act of strategic withdrawal, which is an effective form of contraception. but Antony notices because her ship has these like very distinctive purple sails, and he follows her and boards her ship, and together they sail away to Egypt. Meanwhile, the battle just keeps raging on. And for a few more hours, at least.
Do they have like the drummers like dum 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 dum? You know, to the rowing kind of stuff. Because
probably.
Because then they could use the rhythm method.
That was good. It was worth it.
Absolute unnecessary segue.
I thought you just wanted to talk about drums. Anyway. Antony and Cleopatra having like pieced out of the battle, it just sort of peters out, and Octavian wins the next morning and gains huge numbers of people who come back to his side. And I know this is a lot, but like I'm condensing her whole life into a few minutes here, so we're getting to the end. Over the next few months, Octavian decides that his next step is to invade Egypt. And there's a period where Cleopatra and Antony try to negotiate with him. She asks that her children inherit Egypt and that Antony be able to stay with her in exile. She offers Octavian money. She sends him lavish gifts. But it doesn't work. And the rumor is that as she feels her power crumbling around her, she starts testing poison on prisoners and even her own servants.
Oh my God.
It's never a good sign.
She's testing it.
She's testing it. Yeah.
She's testing
to make sure
poison.
It works, I guess. Yeah.
What did like, she think was going to happen?
She's in dire straits.
Okay.
The band. she plays bass.
Oh, she's a great person.
She's a great person. Yeah. Money for nothing. She wrote that. So in the spring of 30 BC, Octavian invades Egypt, and by August, Antony has surrendered to him.
I just thought of a really good joke there. This is late, but they also did Brother in Arms. She was married to her brother. There's a whole thing there.
It's good.
God, I missed
it. Think of a really, really good joke. They're in the very end of the episode. Say the joke.
Yeah, 10 seconds late. Yeah.
It's the first episode of the new series. Two. You know, you got to get back in the rhythm.
I'm so sorry.
Method,
I'm so sorry.
Which you've already made a joke about.
Right at the end of the episode, say the joke, and then we'll edit it in.
Yeah.
That's a really
good joke. And then it'll only make sense to people at the end of the episode.
Yeah, I'll do that. I'll do that. Good.
Yeah, I like that we're going to get more creative with our editing. This go round. Okay, so long story short, Antony surrenders. Cleopatra hides in her tomb, sends a message to Antony that she's killed herself. He responds by stabbing himself in the stomach. Plutarch, the historian, says that he was still dying when he was brought to Cleopatra in her tomb, and she is actually still alive at this point. But then she's discovered and forcibly marched to the palace to meet Octavian. She tells him that she will not be paraded around as part of his triumph, and that's when she decides to actually take her own life. But this being Cleopatra, first she had a fine meal, including some figs. She and two of her servants retreat to her tomb to do the deed. The popular legend is, of course...
What?
Sorry, to do the other deed.
Okay, gotcha. Go on.
So a way to go out, though. The popular legend is, of course, that she had an asp bite her, but the truth is we don't actually know. It may have been true, but she may have poisoned herself through some other means, like through a needle. No snake was found with her body, although it's like, why would it be?
Yeah, like, there's only one snake in that room.
Stick around. But she did have some tiny puncture wounds on her arm, so... Who knows? Octavian apparently buries Cleopatra and Antony in the same tomb as requested, which is nice. But then he does kill Caesarion, which is not as nice.
Mm.
But Caesarion did reign as Ptolemy the 15th for a whopping 18 days, making him the last pharaoh of Egypt.
I did not. He's the last pharaoh.
The whole thing is completely brutal, isn't it?
Yeah. It's crazy.
Utterly brutal.
I mean, you understand why she and all of them have been such an object of fascination for history.
Yeah.
This is some cool and interesting and wild stuff.
I don't think I was actually... I guess I realize now I wasn't really aware of exactly how that happened.
No, I know. Because I feel like I've heard of it. I knew vaguely the ins and outs. But as I was reading about it, it's like... It's so much more in depth than...
None of this is covered in the Dark Horse music video by Katy Perry. Like, it really isn't.
It is actually light on detail, isn't it?
It is super light in detail.
Yeah, that's one thing about Katy. She's big on spectacle and less good on depth, yeah. I would say. All flash, no substance.
And do the Caesars still rule in Rome?
The Caesars do still rule in Rome.
Wow.
Yeah. Emperor... Silvio Berlusconi. Nope, he's not. He's dead.
Nope.
Did he die?
He did, yeah.
He did die.
He did die.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, he died. He died 4 months ago now. In October.
Right.
Yeah. Yes, of course. Anyway, so that is Antony and Cleopatra, and Cleopatra and Caesar and Egypt and the Ptolemies and the end of the pharaohs. One quick trivia question before we go. By the end of the 20th century... Can you guess how many films have been made about Cleopatra?
Oh, that feature her or like actually about her?
Like actually about her.
I'm going to say 6. I think it's quite a few.
Okay.
14.
Okay. Were you counting them all in your head? 43.
No.
Wow.
43 films, 200 plays and novels, 45 operas, and 5 ballets associated with Cleopatra.
I guess like all the like loads of silent movies, like you're going to...
Yeah.
They're all Cleopatra.
Yeah, why
basically.
Not? Yeah.
It's Cleopatra or a guy chasing a train. Like, you know...
or sometimes both.
You know, choose your poison.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you guys remember my 3 words, but she's very famous.
She's very famous.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
This week, I'm going to talk about the Shaka people.
Ooh.
Who were a huge civilization that lived in an area.
Very good milkshakes.
Shaka shake. That's good.
And they lived in this area covered northwest India, across to kind of western Kazakhstan, okay. and up as far as kind of mid Siberia, like above Baikal.
Wow.
Yeah, quite a big area, right?
Big.
And at this time, they were just managing to get themselves kicked out of India. So here we go. Okay, right. So they're also known as the Saka people, but I don't want to call them that in case they're mistaken for the Arsenal footballer Bukayo Saka, who for the avoidance of all doubt, and I cannot stress this enough, is not a magical 2 millennium old Iranian nomad.
Can you prove that?
We're going to need some evidence on this.
Yeah, have you seen him play?
He does seem... He's pretty magical.
I don't know anything about football, so... Yeah. Okay.
It's all right. Just keep thinking of puns.
He's very talented.
He's a very talented young lad.
He's a good lad. So we don't know that much about these people, by the way, so this will be shorter than your one.
Great, because mine was long.
Yours was quite long. So the first thing to say is that there's really quite a lot of dispute about who they were, because I don't know if you remember my three words. So they're nomadic sort of people, in the sense that all the people of the steppe, which is step with a PPE at the end.
Protective equipment.
So STEP PPE.
Oh, I thought you meant they said masks and gloves on. And we're embroiled in some sort of vicious...
While standing on the stairs.
like illegitimate business dealings in the UK government.
So all these people are a little bit blended into each other at the edges of their nomadic civilization, right? So it's difficult to... But most people seem to agree there was this distinct... culturally coherent people that emerged about 500 BCE and then was present for about 1,000 years or more.
Like, all right, well, incredible. 500 BCE plus 1,000 means you have covered 32.
Oh, by the way, the thing that happened in this year was that they were sort of encroaching into, they were spreading into Afghanistan, northwest Pakistan, northwest India now, as it is now. And this is the time period when, having been in that area, the Indian other cultures in the area then pushed them out.
Yeah.
So that was what was going on at the time, which is why it makes loads of sense talking about them in this episode.
Absolutely.
And you start to find lots of mention of them at that time, so around 500 BC. So there are even some texts that have been found. So it shows that even though they were mostly nomadic, there were clearly centers of population and they're like static bureaucracies of some kind. People like taking lots of notes.
Yeah, good. Love that.
Writing down the taxes. So anyway, I'm coming to the end now of the story about the
Hang on.
The
all you've told us so far is that they...
I'm telling
were
you a few things.
People
few...
of the steppes, and they liked bureaucracy.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, it's the first episode back.
Okay.
So there's a few things. So a lot of the history we have of them from this time period, which is 32 BC, comes from Strabo.
Oh!
Strabo! Yes.
The Greek-Roman geographer.
Yeah. Yes, we've covered him before.
And he, because of his wonderful travels... Mm-hmm. Gave us quite a lot of description of these people. So in terms of their physical appearance, there's also been then quite a lot of genetic analysis done in recent years of those people. And what's quite interesting is that it seems they had almost exclusively European features rather than Chinese or Mongolian features, which ties in with accounts from Strabo about them having fair skin and blue or hazel eyes and red or light hair.
Oh, wow.
Which is like...
So they were Irish?
They were the original Irish people.
They made it so far away.
So they were quite clearly ethnically distinct as well as being culturally distinct from the surrounding peoples at the time. And in case you, by the way, so in case you thought that they basically were sounded like nice, normal people, they did just doing their nomadic thing.
Sure.
For 1,000 years.
As you do.
Incredible.
With ginger hair. They did this. There have been some skulls that have been found from Iron Age cemeteries in South Siberia. And it shows that they did spend quite a lot of time scalping people.
Wait, how do you tell that from... is it scalp, not the skin?
Yeah, so but you can see like the score marks on the skull.
On the skull, okay.
Ouchies.
Yeah, so they would do that. So when they'd be going off... fighting other people and presumably having just killed the people, But maybe they did it when they were alive as well. They would then scalp their enemies.
They were just very bad hairdressers.
Very bad.
Consistently awful.
Yeah.
Consistently.
It's like that riddle about you go to a town and there's two barbers and one has really bad hair and the other has really good hair. Who do you go to
and
get
one has a
from?
Bunch of scalps outside.
One has a bunch of scalps.
They just ask for a short top and sides.
He was like, well, I gotcha.
And one's a Shaka nomad. Anyway, I think so they weren't like, you know, they weren't European in the modern sense of being liberally democratic Europeans.
They were the O'Shakas, the Irish O'Shakas.
They were the Irish O'Shakas.
Oh yeah, Finnegan O'Shaka.
So there you go. I mean, like, no, we don't know very much because it's a long time ago. So
Oh my god.
There you have it. That's a little dip into the life of Arsenal footballer Bukayo Saka.
What a dip.
Such a good dip.
Magician on the field.
So to continue...
He scored a couple last week. I mean, 6 weeks ago.
6 weeks ago, yes, yeah.
I mean, he also scored... He scored 7 goals.
He did against,
last weekend
against Mole United FC.
Against Mole United, who have really just weaseled their way into the Premier League.
Yeah, they've come up from underground.
They really have. Came out of nowhere.
It's unusual for a team funded by the Mole people to have a team that comprises solely of weasels.
That alliance runs deep.
It's such a bizarre one. You think
I tell you though, the state of that pitch, shambolic.
Careful, there's more blimps coming.
Okay, so for my topic this week, this ain't Rome. And to continue the sort of run that Will has started of history, there's not that much of it outside of Rome.
At this time.
Yes, yeah. And I would say arguably everything that's happened since is meaningless unless inside Rome.
True.
Yeah. Thank you, Balenciaga, for that. But today I'm going to cover off Mesoamerica or Mesoamerica. So this is the region that stretches from central Mexico to north central America. And it's got this rich tapestry of civilizations, of which the Maya, who I'm going to talk about today, stand out extremely prominently.
Maya.
Did I say Maya?
Yep.
Maya. It's spelled... Maya.
Mea culpa.
Anyway, so it spans over 3 millennia, which is a vast amount of time.
It's also 3 times longer than Will's people span.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The Saka had nothing.
We're doing great.
Suck it, Saka. So the Maya civilization can be sort of chronologically broadly divided into sort of 3 eras, which is the pre-classical, the classical, and what's the third one?
Post-classical.
Correct. And the classic period is the one that we sort of often talk about. It's lauded for the glyphic texts and these majestic cities, rivers of gold, etc. And that's, you know, the seeds of grandeur were sown much earlier, though, in the sort of pre-classical era we're going to talk about. And specifically, 32 BC, this is nestled deep within the late pre-classic period. So exactly like Will, nothing super specific happened here. So I'm going to talk vaguely of what could have happened in 32 BC.
This is great.
But
I love this.
The problem with history, though, is like if you don't write it down, it didn't really happen accurately.
Yeah.
So all these records are based on archaeology, writings from other people. They didn't really write anything down, but they had these vast cities and rich sort of cultural history stuff, which is far as we'll talk about.
It's just really rude of the Romans to go around the entire world burning everybody else's history so that 2,000 years later, we would only talk about them on a podcast.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, this is the peak of the civilizations being talked about in this podcast.
Yeah.
So notable cities such as El Mirador was flourishing at this time. And there's architectural marvels like La Danta Pyramid, for example. And discoveries of things like the murals in San Bartolo, dating roughly to 100 BCE.
Okay, that's pretty close.
Exactly. Gives us a glimpse of the sort of cosmological narratives that they possessed, because these buildings were inevitably sort of like built to sort of mimic the seasons or solstices, etc. Like
okay.
I have heard in my research as well, there's some people that say, how is it that there's pyramids that happen to spring up in, you know, in Mesoamerica, in Egypt, in things like, you know, Southeast Asia. I mean, it's just a coincidence. There must be aliens behind it. And my answer to that is, like, you know, triangles are pretty much a basic shape. That
it's like the dumbest observation ever, isn't it?
Yeah, it's
like,
just pretty
piles things on top
it's
of each other.
Easy, yeah, exactly. It's a pile shape.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a pile that, like, gets the stuff gets smaller
it's a neat
at the top
pile.
Of the pile. Yeah. It's a very pleasing pile.
Exactly. So they're making pleasing piles at this time. And there's actually sort of building types they call, like, I think it's called type E buildings. Or set E.
Oh.
So it's a specific type of buildings that has, like, you know, sort of three-pronged sort of pyramid kind of things. And it's basically just because, like, some architectural building dig, they had, you know, section A, section B, section C,
okay.
section D.
They weren't, like, shaped like a giant E.
No,
nothing
like
that. That would be impressive.
It would be good. They didn't have the concept of an E, actually. Oh. E's came much later.
So what did they call their club drugs?
Exactly. I was just about to make it. I beat the joke. You completely trampled on that. Anyway, so the classic period that came later details histories of certain people, like the rulers, like Pakal the Great of Palenque, and or the Shield Jaguar, which is a fantastic name.
It's great.
Through the steels.
I'm just looking up class E. Buildings. So a Class E building is a commercial business or service building.
Yeah,
and you're not allowed to change the use of the building without applying for planning.
That's
permission.
Exactly what it was. Yeah,
from in the UK, your county council. So just,
what about in Mesoamerica?
Oh, they follow the same rules. Yeah,
yeah.
They
follow the British council. System.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, back to you.
So while we do have, like, steles and inscriptions and, like, you know, carvings and things like that from the sort of classical period, the late pre-classical is slightly shrouded in mystery.
Mm.
And this lack of clarity stems from the Maya's still evolving sort of glyphic writing system and the sort of impermanent materials that they would use. So they were, like, carving it on, like, wood or textiles or, like, rice paper or something, you know, completely unsuited. Mm. Maybe not rice paper. Something impermeable.
Anybody who wants to know what Mayan glyphs look like can just remember vintage Chipotle decorations. They don't do it anymore. They phased it out. But, like, old school Chipotle had these really cool Mayan-inspired steel and wood artworks.
That probably sounds completely unscalable and they had to cut that back.
Yeah, exactly.
And change the chicken for, like, you know, whatever, chicken substitute.
How do you carve things on clothes?
You've clearly not been a shaman.
Here, I'll show you.
So while we don't have much in the forms of writing, there are still occasional findings, like the tomb at El Zotz, Z-O-T-Z, that suggests the presence of these powerful elites and potentially early rulers and even you know, god king type status, even though their names remain elusive to us.
Hmm.
So despite the ambiguities, the influence of the pre-classical Maya is palpable in the sort of modern times as well in the culture. For example, they had a base 20 counting system known as the vigesimal system.
That seems unlikely.
You tell us, Ant.
Vigesimal.
You're going with vigesimal.
I'm going with vigesimal.
Okay.
Vigesimal. And that is still echoed in many indigenous communities today. There was also a ball game that was actually sort of based in sort of ritualistic terms, we believe. So that it was not just a sport, but it was somehow related to sort of ritual and ceremony. And many indigenous communities today still actually partake in probably, you know, derivatives of it. I mean, it's probably not the exact same thing. I'm not going to say they're playing this exact same game they are did back then. It's like, you know, rugby league. They play rugby league.
Yeah, that's right. It's a slightly different version.
And I mean, this is a stretch here, but I'm going to suggest the cuisine is probably quite close. I'm just guessing now.
What to what?
To what they ate back then.
So this is your...
If you think about it logically, the same soil, similar climate, probably the same kind of things growing, give or take. You know, they didn't have, like, you know, cumin. That wasn't growing there, I think.
Are you sure?
No.
But they didn't have quite so low-cost air travel, did they, in those days?
No, that's
true. And container ships and things.
Exactly, yeah.
So there's a few things that have changed.
There are a few things that have changed, yeah.
One of the things...
They probably didn't have, like, durian fruit.
Yeah, right. True. Or kiwi.
Or kiwi.
Guess, yeah. Staple of Mesoamerican cultural eating. Can I
give you an arithmetic problem to solve in Mayan base 20?
Yeah, for sure.
What is dash plus dot 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 dash?
I mean, I don't know what dash and
13.
Yes.
God, that was a total guess.
Nice.
There is also, to this day...
It's probably right. That's probably what it's going to be, right?
I assumed one was a 10 and the others were ones. It was either that or it was 31.
So, to this day, there are still 30 extant languages.
You mean based, dash, dash, dash,
dash, dash? Sorry, dash, 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 extant languages based on, like, historically based on Mayan that's still spoken by nearly 6 million people.
That's really cool.
So, I mean, all the derivatives and stuff and modernized, yeah, of course, are not the same thing. You know, recognizing the roots of contemporary Mesoamerican culture, appreciating the resilience of these traditions that have endured millennia and sort of rooted through that. But we just know so little about them and we're still discovering things to this day. So it's just a fascinating bit of history that I wanted to highlight because we focus very much on, you know, a lot of like quote unquote Western history, yeah, and, you know, things with like, I don't know, written records and all this kind of boring stuff. But just wanted to highlight something that maybe we haven't touched on before. And I knew nothing about them.
Yeah.
And arguably no less now.
Yeah, somehow you've gotten farther away from it. I think they're very cool. I took a class at uni called Digging the Glyphs, which was like absolutely the best class ever. And we talked about the Maya a lot. I hope we can talk about them again on a future podcast.
Yeah, I know.
Maybe during the late pre-post classical. Yeah,
so I think there's a bit more sort of like inscriptions and writing in, yeah, the classical period. So a little
there's
bit
the whole thing with the calendar and the remember in, yeah, 2012.
Yeah,
when
so this,
everyone
this,
was
this
like,
comes from them. It's, yeah, like the calendar ran out in
2012. Yeah, yeah.
And the thing is, everyone thought it was a big deal, but like it wasn't really a big deal for them because it was like the new year for them. They just have a new set of, yeah, calendars. It wasn't actually a big deal. But I mean, their civilization lasted such a long time. I think the sort of classical period from 250 AD to 900 AD, and then the post-classical period, which sort of interfaced with like
the Aztecs,
900 AD to 1500 AD.
Yeah.
Which is like, you know, this is when they're butting up against sort of conquistadors and things like that as,
yeah,
well. So like a lot of atrocities to cover. Don't you worry about that.
Oh yeah, we'll get back to the atrocities.
But I mean, the history's going to be, you know, whitewashed by like the heroics of the Spanish Armada coming across or the Portuguese or whatever.
Great.
So yeah.
Have we talked about the Aztecs yet? Did one of us do Cortez? Did I talk about Cortez?
I did a little bit, yeah.
Okay,
I talked tangentially about him, but I talked about someone else.
Nice, cool. Well.
That's it.
That's it.
History.
Did it. We did it. Nailed it. All right. Well, thanks for joining us for this first episode of season 2. We are so happy to be back.
It's so good.
And bringing our nonsense to you.
It's just good to have a bit of sort of respite and distraction from the mole people, the travesty of air travel, blimps, just
I know. We hope this reaches you safely and that you, yeah, are not cowering in terror from the mole people.
And to our new mole overlords, we welcome you.
We salute you. Feel free to submit to hijack the random number generator. We'll happily, oh, yeah, cover any year in your history. Just get in touch. But in the meantime, that's everything you need to know about the year 32 BC, which is famously before the mole came.
Exactly. Out. Or as it is now known, 2055 BC.
BM.
BM. Great. Yeah, all that's left is to get another year.
Yes, that's right.
Sorry, I don't know whose turn it is in The Apprentice.
Oh, it's my turn. It's my turn. And I am firing up the random number generator now as we speak. And while it's firing up, just a reminder, one thing you can do if
what can
you
they
like...
Do? What can they do?
Listeners, one thing they, ooh, can do...
Just one small thing?
One small thing.
Good.
Is they could tell someone about this podcast...
Could they shout it from their blimps?
If you're in a blimp, just shout it very loudly down at the pathetic plebs below. And
do you think we can incite a riot on Oxford Street like other influencers?
Exactly. Feel free to incite a riot if you like. Also, if you are on a train, just walk down the train carriage.
Pull the emergency stop.
And just tell every single person on the train carriage about the
That's
podcast.
Your own whistle stop tour.
That is your own, yeah. Do your own whistle stop yeah. tour.
I mean,
yeah, or hire a train, hire your own train. Not many people do that these days.
Yeah.
But that's feel free to hire a train and do yeah. that. And anyway, the random number generator is now up and going. And the next year is 1841.
Oh, all right. Goodness.
Oh, that's so much better than
that. We don't have to talk about people that have written nothing down.
Yeah. There was so much history then.
That's good. I'm excited.
1841. That's great. The 1800s. Are good.
We could. Why didn't we just do a thing where we just did all the 1800s from start to finish? 100 episodes done.
I know that would have been great. Well, because I'm still holding out for the 1000 BC episode, which is going to be a banger.
Absolute banger. That's got to be like a boozy episode. You're gonna drink a lot for that one and just like let it rip.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
As opposed to what we usually do.
We'll see you. We'll see you next time for 192 BM.
Tell your train friends. Bye.